Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape varieties.
One of Australia's leading beer judges.
People always ask, how do you get involved in sake and how does that connect to music?
Because wine is an adventure.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
The prestigious title of Sake Samurai.
Looking at whiskey in more of an artful culinary way.
The difference between getting good quality fresh hops, it just translates straight through into the beer.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Back in 2018, when I launched this podcast, I spoke about the fact that the drinks industry was in a state of flux. Drinkers are enjoying a wider repertoire of different beverages than ever before, and producers are responding with new and innovative drinks that blur the lines between beer, wine and spirits. Marlborough, New Zealand-based winery Squealing Pig has been at the forefront of this trend. The brand is owned by Treasury Wine Estates, the Australian company behind Penfolds and Wins, which have previously featured on this podcast. Squealing Pig Rosé is the number one selling rosé wine in the Australian market, and the Squealing Pig Pinot Noir is also a strong performer. The company has built on this success with the launch of several new hybrid products in the space of a year: a rosé gin, a Pinot Noir gin, and now the Gin Secco premixes, which combine the same base gin with Squealing Pig Prosecco and soda in a 250ml slimline can. Jason Crawley is a 30-year bar industry veteran who has been working with Squealing Pig on the launch of these hybrid products. Jason has an unrivaled perspective on some of these exciting trends that we've been speaking about on the Drinks Adventures podcast. He joins us in this bonus episode sponsored by Squealing Pig. All right, well, Jason Crawley, thanks so much for joining me on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Pleasure. Great to be here. Thanks for having me along.
Now, you've been in the industry probably longer than you'd care to mention.
Yeah.
I think 30 years was the big 3-0.
Yeah.
Looking at just the last few years, can you remember a time in your career where things were more dynamic than they have been recently, with the innovation and the stuff that's going on in spirits particularly?
Yeah. When I first came to Sydney 20 years ago, it was just pre the flavoured vodka vibe, you know, and you went down to any bar in Darling Harbour and they'd have 50 different flavoured vodkas on the back bar from different companies, you know, and that's kind of where it was at. And this is kind of a more evolved mirror of that as well, whereas now I've got, you know, best part of 600 gins in the market, all vying for a bit of attention, you know.
With a bit more, I would argue, a little bit more integrity in the liquid than there would have been back then.
And a consumer following as well, because, you know, if you remember the early noughties and the late 90s, it was all about luxury vodka brands. And that's kind of all people, you were what you drank. It was, you know, pick your premium vodka and kind of pick your lifestyle and on you go. You know, we saw 15 years ago, it was only bartenders drinking Negronis. You know, no one was drinking that in this market at all. It was all vodka, lime and soda bitters or variations thereof. And now we've got people like, you know, we own a small bar in Enmore. And, you know, the amount of Negronis that people are drinking, it's unbelievable. So the evolution's not only just been in the product matrix, but I guess the corporates are kind of now trying to match the appetite of exploration. You know, people are just really like looking for not the next new thing, but it's just everybody's looking, like everybody's seeking new things, and there's more and more channels emerging. So I've never seen anything like it, to answer your question more succinctly. There's just, I've never seen so many different types of Old Tom gin, barrel aged gin, you know, London dry style and American gins coming, and people also jumping in and around categories, you know, as well. So they're not necessarily staying true to their one thing, which you could bank on years ago. You know, this is us, when the corporates do their market segmentation, you know, you had the fence sitters and you had the retirees and the, you know, the empty nesters, and you had all these definable markets. Whereas now it's not that clear anymore. You know, it's very, very muddy and murky, but exciting. So it's different.
Do you notice that when you've got people coming into the bar, for example, that they're not so specific about what they think they're going to be drinking that night, they're a little bit more open to trying new things?
Both, man. I would imagine, just to kind of give it some clarity, 50% of people, generally speaking, have a pre-populated idea of which brand, which drink, how they want to drink it in the bar that we're in. I can't speak for everybody's bar. And then you've got another 50% that are just genuinely like out to be led And people, I still don't understand how people can say, I don't really know what I feel like. I always find that strange in a bar. I don't really know what I feel like. I always know what I feel like. Yeah. It's kind of a pint of Guinness or something else, you know? So you've got like people, it's kind of still open, so it's not fully formed yet. I mean, if you look at the US model where, you know, cocktails were mostly were born over there, all the drinks that we drink pretty much came from there. And, you know, you've got grandmas that order Ramos gin fizzes in bingo bars. You know, it's just part of their culture. Whereas here, it's kind of been a rapid learning. And it's all happened in the last 20 years in a nutshell.
What are your thoughts on what's going on in gin broadly at the moment? It's been a pretty incredible explosion of new products.
It is incredible. We launched the Squealing Pig Pinot Noir gin on World Gin Day. And there was a lot of like proper gin experts there. And they said that there were, on the day they announced that there was over 590 gins that had been released in Australia alone in 2019, which kind of gives an overall view on what that looks like. And then kind of out of that, everybody, I think initially was just, it became a bit of a botanical arms race with people trying to find their unique botanical, whether where it was, you know, some gum tree that no one had heard of or a weird herb that, you know, from back in yesteryear was used for something. And now it's kind of become, or it's becoming a little bit more of a categories within categories where we've got the pink gin and the rosé gins and, you know, the hybrid gins. And then, of course, you've got like the navy strength style that are really kind of, you know, having satisfying the demand for that. And then, of course, we've got the old Tom style with a bit of sweetness. So the market and the categories have just started to form their own lanes where it used to just be like gin. And now we've got like gins within gins within gins. And so it's quite confusing for consumers, I would imagine. But also it's kind of promoting this notion of, you know, people that are preparing to take a bit of a risk and jump around a little bit. People are kind of happy to do that. But I think, you know, I think it's a little bit like small bars. I think everybody tries all of them around their city once and they go back to the one that they like the most, more frequently. So it's kind of, it's great to have all these players, but it's also got to be a really good product to kind of have that longevity.
Tell me about those two gins and you know, what's the sort of flavour profile from your perspective?
Sure, man. The rosé gin, the Squealing Pig Rosé, it's got 10 botanicals in there, which is kind of a decent benchmark. You know, there's certain gins like Tanqueray, for example, only have 4. Plymouth gin, 7, you know. It's not all about how many botanicals you have. It's all about the balance of those botanicals within the gin. So it's not necessarily, you know, you've got the monkey one from Germany. I think it's 57 or something, 50-something. You know, and again, great gin, but it's just like a little, can be confusing for consumers when they kind of go, well, how do you get 53 different elements into something? So, but the Squealing Pig Rosé gin, I guess it was the rationale for its existence was based on the incredible demand for rosé wine when Squealing Pig launched it, quickly became Australia's leading rosé gin. And of course, with the demand in gin coming at that particular point, at 2018 and 19, it kind of made sense for Squealing Pig to kind of step into the gin world and kind of go, well, what assets do we have? We've got this beautiful base gin with 10 botanicals in there. Why don't we put a splash of our character and rosé wine in there and have the first to market with a little splash of wine in there. And then it just kind of went from there, really. So from a flavour perspective, you know, it's the juniper's nice. It's a nice balance of spices. It gives off a nice salmon hue. And on the finish, those citrus peels, nothing too wacky and wild. It's very approachable, very, I guess you can use it with into soda or with tonic water. But I guess the key point of it is it's got a lovely, not sweet, but like a lifted strawberry finish to it, which makes it really quite pleasant, you know, with tonic or soda water, depending on whether you, you know, whichever one you're in, however many calories you're counting. The whole thing with Squealing Pig, you know, it's gin that doesn't take itself too seriously. You know, we see here a product coming out of a wine business, which, you know, wine people have destroyed the wine business, in my humble opinion. It's so complicated now and so like unapproachable. You feel like you know, the least amount in the room with wine when you sit with wine people. It's very intimidating. Whereas the gin is completely opposite to that. It's a very easy, approachable, fun brand. It's a little bit quirky and irreverent, you know, and it just says, you do with me what you wish, you know. So there's, you know, the salmon pink rosé gin is just kind of really easy and approachable. And then in 2020, we launched the Pinot Noir gin. And again, just a couple more botanicals. We kind of tasted several iterations during, you know, the production process. And You know, we also looked at the Four Pillars success with Bloody Shiraz too, and, you know, they were already doing really well in that space. And we didn't want to be anywhere near that, really. I guess we wanted, because it's Pinot Noir, obviously a lighter style than Shiraz, we were heading more towards, you know, getting a little bit more of a lighter style, even though it's red, darker red. But what was missing after about four or five iterations, we found that we really needed to put some like heavier spices in there. Those like Christmas cake spices of like cinnamon and clove. And that's kind of, you know, you get all your usual juniper on the attack, the citrus balance in the middle. But then on the finish, that lifted strawberry that you get with the rosé isn't there. You've just got more of a nice spicier style with the cinnamon and clove. And again, from a mixed drinks perspective, great with tonic and soda, or indeed the Sonic, with a little wedge of orange. It's kind of like, you know, think of it like a sangria style, if you wish. It's not too far away. And then we also kind of tinkered with this idea of having, you know, having it served warm in a little flask at the footy or things like that. So you could have a little glass, almost like a, you know, a gin liqueur of sorts, even though it isn't a liqueur, but you can think of it even being served warm. So it kind of fits in lots of different camps, you know. But the whole idea of them, though, is gins that don't take themselves too seriously, things that you can have fun with, and two different styles. We've got the rosé, which is a bit lighter, salmon pink, easy drinking, and then the Pinot Noir, which has just got that more spice to it.
Cool. And then moving along to the Gin Secco. The clue's in the name. What went into putting that product together?
Well, again, looking at the market insights with, you know, the, I guess, drinking healthier, lighter drinks, you know, innovative ideas. You know, everybody went crazy for, you know, Prosecco. Obviously, those kind of lighter aperitivo style drinks, it seemed like everybody seemed to know what they were within a year, which is quite remarkable. And of course, they were popping up everywhere, even bars popping up with aperitivo only kind of styles of drinks, you know. So the Gin Secco came around based on, you know, the insight on the appetite for gin, the appetite for lighter aperitivo style drinks, you know, that the gin fizzes of sorts. And I guess drinking lighter and more healthier, less calorific drinks, the passion and I guess the demand for that now is huge. We're seeing that also in, you know, bottled cocktails and also, you know, the seltzer movement with, you know, everybody's kind of, you know, we launched a vodka soda product about 2 or 3 years ago now. And, you know, the astronomical sales in that space. So you kind of starting to see people just wanting to drink less sugar. Of course, there's all the insights into tonics and things like that. It's kind of just as sugary as Coca-Cola in some respects, and not in all brands, but in many of them. So I think it's kind of makes sense to kind of now to start to combine these kind of, you know, great things that people genuinely love and will enjoy and drink healthier, and put it in a nice 250ml slimline can, and then have two options. So you've got the Gin Secco, which is the base gin, Prosecco and soda water. I think they're about 99 calories per can. And then the Gin Secco, the rosé, has obviously that market leading rosé wine in there with again the base gin and some Prosecco and soda. So it kind of, you've got two kind of nice options there. And again, they're just really on the moment, aren't they? Whereas you can't really, everybody knows what a Aperol Spritz is, you know, those spritz drinks. Everybody's kind of, you know, through the summer months last year, pre-COVID, you know, I think Campari put their entire global marketing budget behind the Aperol Spritz, which is why you kind of saw it in every bus stop, every over the line marketing campaign. It was everywhere. So it's kind of had a massive impact as well, I believe. And yeah. So kind of now driving it towards lifestyle and again, recruiting young people into the space that maybe previously only drank vodka, lime and soda. They can now still have lower calorific drinks, but with a little bit more flavour in them.
And how does the gin sort of meld with the character of the Prosecco?
Gin is such a citrusy, you know, junipery, spicy type thing that it kind of mixes well with everything, which is, I think, you know, over the hundreds of years that we've been drinking gins, you know, I think it's become, I don't want to say the new vodka, but in a nutshell, it's kind of like everybody's starting to realise how mixable it is. So it's not too hard to get, you know, some science geeks and some wine geeks together and, you know, really make a product harmonize with, you know, good formulas and good products and just kind of make it work. But in a nutshell, I mean, gin's been in sparkling wine cocktails for years. When you think something about French 75 as a basic example, you know, gin, wine, and even mint and sugar, it still kind of works well. So I feel like the flavors have integrated really well. And I think I had a couple of cans of it last night, actually. I got the kids in bed and I hadn't watched the Formula One. So I just cracked them open to see, you know, I'd tried the gin sucker, but I hadn't tried the rosé one. And yeah, and I just sat back and watched the Grand Prix with it. And I thought the flavours had intermingled really well. I liked it that much, I opened the second one.
When we touched on, you know, the health conscious consumer earlier on, I mean, is that something that you're kind of seeing, you know, from
100%,
your speaking to people in the industry, just that, you know, you mentioned about people coming in and drinking Negronis. Are you also seeing that there are a lot of consumers now that are maybe looking for something that isn't quite
absolutely
so boozy?
Man, 100%. And I didn't realise, again, back in my bartending days, you know, before I came, you know, more mature, I was a bit younger, the mainstay of drinks were mixed with Coca-Cola. You know, you'd have a rum and Coke guy, a bourbon and Coke guy, a scotch and Coke guy, brandy and Coke guy. And since opening the bar here, fast forward 20-odd years, you know, it's all soda water. Like, we probably buy like 6 cans of Coke a week, max. And that's generally opened and thrown away, which is a massive insight. So people that are having spirit and a mixer in a bar, gin and soda, gin and tonics, going more towards gin and soda, moreover, to answer your question. You know, the people that like one sugar in the tea drink a gin and sonic, which is half tonic, half tonic water, half soda. We get a lot of that as well. But in the main, yeah, we just get through so much soda water. It's unbelievable. It's completely gone the other way. So people genuinely are drinking healthily there. And also, I think they're also learning that, you know, they're learning to taste drinks again properly. I mean, it wouldn't matter. No one in the world would know what spirit it was mixed with cola, if it was which vodka and cola it would be in there, or any of the other spirit categories, really. People were just like brand led back then, and it was all marketing. I'll have a Stolly and cola, and that was that, you know. Whereas now it's kind of, well, people just genuinely want to taste things, which is why gin is such a great timing for gin, because you can, if they're a, you know, a beautiful, well-made products in the gin world, then people add soda water to it, and it's just like it's rained outside, you can suddenly taste and smell everything. And it just makes sense for people. So that's kind of why I say in another 5 or 10 years, people will generally be coming more brand loyal, because they'll have found a product that they like and they can mix it with soda and they know it's going to be, you know, you can taste it, it's consistent, tastes great, and they're actually tasting the product for the first time. And it's not just tonic, Fanta, or Coca-Cola mixed with my spirit, you know? So it's quite interesting like that.
All right, well, Jason, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, no problem at all. It's been a pleasure coming over. Thanks for having me, and have a good one. Take care.
Thank you.
And you can find the Squealing Pig products in select retailers and on-premise venues across Australia. Visit squealingpig.com for more information. The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson. Like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.